Okay, the first slide is just an introduction, which is probably quite familiar to most of you, but the point is to display the circumnuclear disk, which has these neutral clouds of molecular gas, which we will claim are extremely dense clouds, very compact, roughly 0.2 parsecs in size. Densities, approximately 5 times the previous estimates for the densities. So what I'm going to show is some new higher resolution interferometry of these clouds, and in addition, some HST imaging, which has actually already been published, of the ionized gas in the mini spiral in the Paschen Alpha line. That was published 2 years ago. Now, as I see it, there are some obvious problems here, and they've been pointed out by people previously. If the densities are really only 10 to the 6 to 10 to the 7, the clouds in the circumnuclear disk are actually unstable to tidal disruption. They actually need densities 5 or 6 times higher than that at the radius where they're seen. So the question is then, how do these clouds actually survive? And one possibility, of course, is that they actually are very short-lived. Another possibility is actually maybe the densities have been underestimated, which is what I will argue. The other thing is that if, in fact, they really are tidally disrupted on a sort of orbital time, dynamical time, then you might expect some fraction of the mass, which is in here, roughly 10 to the fifth solar masses, to actually be accreted inwards on at a rate of roughly 1 solar mass per year, which obviously conflicts with the present-day estimates of the accretion rate and the time average estimate of the accretion rate if the total mass is 4 times 10 to the 6 solar masses for a Sagittarius star. So either the situation now is very atypical in terms of time, or the gas obviously doesn't make it to Sagittarius star. I think these are two obvious alternatives. So the observations which I'm going to show are from Owens Valley, a high resolution, about factor of 2 higher resolution than the Wright et al. Study, of imaging HCN, HCO plus in the continuum by Michael Christopher. He's a lead author. He's a student at Caltech, and Susan Stolovey and Min Young and myself. And for the first time, I think we very clearly resolved the circumnuclear disk clouds, indicating very high densities. And then the Paschen Alpha imaging is with the NECMOS camera on HST in camera 3, which gives 0.2 arc second resolution, but very large field of view. And that's with Susan Stolovey, Marcia Rieke, Michael Christopher, and Farhad Yusufzadeh. The advantage of this imaging is that you actually get an extinction map from the Paschen Alpha relative to the radio free continuum or the radio recombination lines, 92 alpha. And then you can take that extinction map and correct the ionized gas to get a more proper distribution of what the ionized gas really looks like, kind of extinction free. So for the people who do interferometry, it's a 10 mosaic image which we've made in the HCN line. And here are the maps. The continuum map here showing the mini spiral, Sagittarius A star, HCN, HCO plus, very similar, except you can see some variations up in this area in the ratio of HCN to HCO plus, but I'm not going to dwell on that. Here is what the kinematics look like for the circumnuclear gas clear rotation, and we haven't ourselves actually put much effort into this. And unfortunately, I have Ms. Robbins' map, but presumably you talked about the dynamics of this gas. Oh, okay. And then this is what the continuum looks like in the F190 filter, that is 1.9 microns with NICMOS on HST. The area in the very central portion was imaged with NICMOS camera 2, so it has slightly higher resolution. You can actually see the diffraction pattern surrounding the bright stars. But the bulk of the image is produced at 0.2 arc second resolution. Now the reason why I'm showing this is that it's pretty clear there are areas of enormous extinction here. These are not gaps in data coverage. The data actually covers a funny shaped figure like this, but there are clearly places inside where there's enormous extinction. You essentially see no stars from the inner region. And I often say to myself or remind the infrared astronomers what would happen if one of these clouds was sitting right there. Then this would be entirely the province of the radio astronomers. Ha, ha, ha. which would not be good, let's put it that way. Anyway, so let me keep moving on. So the HCN map then superposed on the optical continuum. This is a 1.87 micron narrowband filter, which includes the stellar continuum from the stars, and then also the diffuse emission from the Paschen alpha line. In order to produce an image of the ionized gas, you take this filter image and subtract the 1.9 micron stellar continuum image. Now, then in contours are the HCN contours, and you can see lots of structure within the circumnuclear disk, and roughly the outline of the circumnuclear disk is the outer extent of the inner star cluster. Now, the boxes here actually show the locations of Paschen alpha emission line stars, which I'll come back to a little bit later. But the point I want to make is that there's lots of fine small-scale structure on the scale of 3 or 4 or 5 arc seconds in the molecular gas, and you really need high resolution to resolve the properties of those clumps. So suppose you just naively take the 1.9 micron image and subtract it from 1.87 micron image, and multiplying by a free ranging scale factor. Well, this is basically the best subtraction you can do. And the problem you run into is that in the places where the stars are, you have very imperfect subtraction of the stellar continuum because the stars have different intrinsic colors and because they suffer variable extinction across the region. So you can't just take a single scale factor like 0.91 times this image and subtract it. You actually need a scale factor which varies across the image because the extinction is variable. So what we actually did was to determine locally the scale factor to get best subtraction of the stars at each star and then interpolate those scale factors across the image, presumably mimicking the variation in the reddening. And that's what the final image looks like. It actually looks quite good. Obviously, there are near some of the bright stars, which are, in fact, in some cases, are emission line stars, there's not good subtraction. But on the whole, the diffuse emission is actually represented quite beautifully in this image. Now, onto the issue of the extinction. You can derive it, as I said before, from the ratio of Paschen alpha to radio free using this 6-centimeter map. We also took the Roberts and Goss H92 alpha radio recombination line map. The problem is that in the case of the free 6-centimeter continuum, some of that obviously is non-thermal and therefore shouldn't be ratioed in there. In the case of the H92 alpha, it actually has not terribly great signal to noise and the resolution is not that good. So you'd have to sort of use both of these to kind of confirm each other. So obviously, extinction maps or reddening maps from the stellar colors. In any case, here is the extinction map as determined from the ratio of Paschen alpha to free. And you can see that actually the extinction follows fairly closely the outlines of the circumnuclear disk. You can obviously only determine the extinction by this technique where there's ionized gas. And so you can't determine the extinction out in these regions. And also, if the extinction is too high, you won't see any Paschen alpha at all in that region. In fact, the extinctions in this area are roughly about 40 magnitudes visual, and the inferred column densities we'll see in a second looking through these clouds are approximately 1,000 magnitudes. So it's pretty clear to me, at least, that the ionized gas that you're actually seeing is probably the surface of these clouds rather than a background sheet of ionized gas behind the cloud. Feel free to ask questions as I go through this sooner or later. So the distribution of extinctions in different pixels is shown here. And you can see the median extinction is 31 magnitudes. It's actually in good agreement with previous infrared studies from the star. Here is the extinction determined from the H92 alpha line. And once again, one, as I said before, one's limited a little bit by the areas where you can detect the H92 alpha significantly. but showing basically the same spatial distribution. And then here's a plot of the ratio of the two extinctions, and basically they agree fairly well, although there's a tail out here. Okay, so then with the extinction determined from the radio free free in Poisson alpha, or for the radio continuum rather, you can extinction correct the Poisson alpha, and that's what's shown in the false color image here. And then once again, the contours are the HCN emission contours from the neutral gas. Very beautiful map, showing tremendous detail on fine structure. I think rivaling the 6-centimeter continuum maps in terms of detail. And then here's a blow up in the central region with the F187 image with the emission line stars in the central star cluster and then the contours of HCN emissions surrounding it. So let me now concentrate really on what the most interesting result is, and that is the properties of the neutral gas clouds. Once you start to resolve the emission line regions for HCN, then you, of course, you can measure their size, the velocities are easily measured, and the brightness temperatures. From the size and the velocity, you can estimate the mass required to bind those clumps of material. You can also estimate a mass, a lower limit to the mass, from assuming that the HCN is optically thin. That would imply that if it's optically thin, then every photon that is emitted by collisional excitation of the HCN actually escapes from the region. But not every photon emitted by spontaneous decay, I should say. So it's clearly a lower limit, because it may well be that the optical depth is substantial in the HCN line, not all photons escape. A more reasonable estimate is, in fact, to estimate column densities and optical depths of HCN by measuring H13CN, assuming a canonical isotope ratio. And unfortunately, the H13CN is sufficiently weak that you can only do that in sort of a gross way for the whole circumnuclear disk. And that ratio of HCN to H13CN implies a mean optical depth of about 4. So we've one technique for estimating the masses is to assume that the optical depth of the HCN is 4, estimate column densities, and then infer masses. So we delineated separate clumps or cores within the circumnuclear disk, and they're shown here. And then I'll show in the next two slides crosscuts in space and velocity going through each one of these clumps. And I think the ones that are picked out are B and I and J and I think O down here. So here are the first two for B. This is a vertical, a horizontal cut and a vertical cut. And you can see it's well resolved spatially and in velocity. So clearly you can measure a full width half power and then infer a diameter for the clumps in both of these cases. And then here are two more just to sort of assure you that it's fairly representative. And then if you take those sizes and velocities and estimate binding masses, that's the for each clump, that's the solid line distribution here, the required masses for virial for gravitational binding. The distribution of mass is determined by assuming that all the clumps have mean optical depth of 4 in the HCN 1 to 0 line, is shown here. And then this lower limit estimate, assuming that the HCN is optically thin, is shown here. And these two HCN estimates are based upon assuming a standard galactic abundance of HCN relative to hydrogen. That is 10 to the minus 9 for HCN relative to hydrogen. And that is an uncertainty. It could well be that in the galactic center, the HCN abundance is actually enhanced. In any case, these last two estimates actually agree quite well. It's quite reassuring with mass estimates in the range of 10 to the fourth to 10 to the fifth. So if you take then the sizes and estimate the densities of the cores, their densities are up in here for the tau equals 4 and virial mass estimates, the triangles and the stars, and then the diamonds are the lower limit optically thin estimates. And for comparison, the required density for tidal stability is shown there. And you can see that in the first two cases, actually, most of the densities actually indicate that the clumps would be tidally stable. In the gravitational field of both the central black hole and the central star cluster. No, the previous estimates were coming from less spatially resolved observations of the clumps. So they have larger sizes, and therefore the mass was distributed over a larger volume. Yeah, they were HCM estimates. So, obviously, if you're going to suddenly revise the estimates for the densities by a factor of five, you'd like to have some confirmation of that or some reassurance that it's fairly reasonable. And probably, I think the critical observations which really need to be done now would be high resolution measurements of the dust continuum in the submillimeter. And it might be a good project if it hadn't already been done for SMA. The only thing we could come up with was, in fact, I think it's a JCMT map of 450 microns, a 7 arc second resolution. That's shown here. And the resolution is really quite insufficient. But if you take the peak flux in these clumps in the circumnuclear disk and assume, I think the dust temperature we assumed was 50 degrees Kelvin, then the optical depth would be 0.1. And that implies a column density roughly half that, more or less consistent with that obtained from the virial analysis. But one really, it would be great to have high resolution submillimeter continuum dust maps. So if it holds up, our conclusion is that the high resolution maps actually show the cores to be considerably smaller than previous measurements. Densities, therefore, are quite a bit higher. Typical size of one of these clumps is a quarter of a parsec. If you take that size plus the density, it would imply a column density of 10 to the 25th or 10 to the 4th magnitudes visual extinction. The clouds are tidally stable, if that's the case, and that might imply that they actually have much longer lifetimes than their internal dynamical lifetime. And so the issue is, can you actually form, there's probably been discussion before I arrived about forming stars within the circumnuclear disk in these so-called tidally stable clouds. And I think it's entirely possible there's, in fact, no real evidence of active star formation within the cloud cores in the circumnuclear disk, as far as I know. Obviously, with these very high extinctions, you wouldn't expect to see such star formation in the near infrared, but you would expect to see high surface brightness radio H2 regions within the clouds. But my guess is that you could, in fact, actually suppress it a little bit, because the free free would actually be optically thick. So. Well, HCN is a canonical, fairly high density tracer. It's 10 to the 5th, 10 to the 6th. And you could start to go to some of the vibrationally excited transitions, but as far as I know, that has not been done. But, you know, they sort of get up to 10 to the 9, 10 to the 10 per cc, you know, like silicon monoxide. So then, you know, if you form a star cluster within a circumnuclear disk, you might let it decay by dynamical friction into the central region. It's obvious, and I'm sure this has already been discussed here, that in order to have that cluster furnish stars on the highly eccentric orbits, basically the cluster has to form with a high enough central density that it would be tidally stable at the point of the parasagittae. What do you call it? Parabothon. Okay. So it's not just enough to form a star cluster within the circumnuclear clouds as we see them. It has to be a very condensed cluster within those clouds. The other possibility is, of course, that these clouds are relatively stable within the circumnuclear disk, but they will decay by dynamical friction into the center, just the way a star cluster would decay. And then, I was talking to Jonathan before, that gas would be deposited into a central disk where it might actually form stars in situ in that region. But I think my voice is running out. I think I'm finished at that point. Thank you.
based on the star formation rate in CMB from far infrared observations?
My guess is that the far infrared luminosity is around 10 to the fifth, but I don't really know that. Can anybody else answer that question? 10 to the fifth solar. There must be somebody here. I thought 10 to the 6 for actually a fairly, quite a bit larger region. I'm okay. So if I remember the number correctly, the 10 to the 6, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Would imply roughly 10 to minus 5 mSun per year in equilibrium. The sulfur fine structure transition, I think, has a very low critical. I mean, it's, I think, a few thousand per cc critical density. The HCN has been looked at for a long time. There are many observations. What? Maybe Mark can. The problem is that some of those vibrationally excited transitions, they also have energetic problems too. Like the ones which I mentioned, the silicon monoxide masers, they have 5,000 degree E over K excitation energy. So that would not be appropriate, but there must be, you know, other.
I don't know anything about this, but I feel like I've heard many talks where people said that they looked into sparking and found into a nice gas.
Well, they're the water masers, which you may be. What's that? I have the paper here. I think they're about 20 kilometers per second. Our observational resolution is about 4 kilometers per second. But, you know, I can give you the, what? Full width half maximum. But, you know, I should check the number before you quote it. Well, I don't have any counter argument to it. I was going to say that the fact that the column density estimates from the tau equals 4 HCN agreed well with the mean density from the virial theorem suggests that basically there's not huge internal density gradients within the clouds. But if there's a sea of mist-like high-density clumps, I'm not sure I could rule that out. Yeah. The total mass is approaching 10 to the 6 solar masses.
And the limit on the star formation rate is 10 minus 3 quoted far in 7 miles. Extraordinarily low.
I mean, these are not standard clouds, though, of course. I mean, it's not the. On the passion.
Yeah, what are real? We're coming from 3,000 hotels, we do not find an operating person. How much do that change where you're supposed to be? When you talk to not a new job or a deep job, passion on how to be not social, so you speak to me.
The extinction map I showed was entirely based upon the diffuse emission, not based upon locations at any star. you know, we had a stellar mask and judged those pixels to be unreliable. Yes, right.
So yesterday we discussed a lot the following question. To what extent, if you had stars just like the stars, the bright stars in the inner central star cluster, to what extent would you see these stars if they were further out to between one and 10 times? So I hope this matches the high extinction stars out there. I don't know how much of the image is actually covering, but roughly what fraction would you say of the annulus between, say, roughly 1 and 10 parsecs is actually covered by the high extinction?
I think actually a fairly small fraction. Because remember, it's a planar annulus, and so it, you know, there's a lot of area above and below it. But
so that's significant.
I don't know what the covering factor would actually be, but I'm just guessing maybe 10% or something. No, but I think you're talking about a few parsecs. Is that correct? But my guess is it's 10 or 20%. Yeah. I mean, the radius of the disk is roughly 1.5 parsecs, and the lateral thickness of those clouds is roughly 0.3, 0.4 parsecs. So you could figure out the covering factor. Yeah, that's a very, very good point. The interferometry maps show, I think the number is roughly 40% of the single dish flux in that region. So there could be some more uniformly extended emission within the circumnuclear disk, which is not shown in that particular map. But I don't know where you're going to. Go ahead. I think it's very unlikely that you're seeing temperature variations, because if you look at the contrast in the clumps and, you know, going up the peak of the clumps, it's actually sort of like 10 to 1 or something like that. And I don't think the temperatures vary that much, because a lot of the heating of that 10 to 6 L sun is you know, distributed heating. I think there could be a lot of colder gas inside of each one of those clumps, because, you know, if a lot of the heating is externally generated by this star cluster, the young stars in that region, you know, not very much will penetrate into the clumps. So there could be a lot of cold dust in the interior of the clumps. So, you know, if Jim and the SMA people go out and do a submillimeter map, it'll be very important as to what temperature they adopt in analyzing the column densities. But it may well be this colder dust. And the existing submillimeter observations, there's some disagreement about what the dust temperature actually is. Not ours, but the previous one. No, I understand that, yeah. I suppose so, but it seems like, you know, you might, I wouldn't want to appeal that as a general situation. But. Of what, sorry? why is there an inner edge? I don't know. I mean, it has also occurred to me that, you know, there obviously should be dynamical friction decay of these clumps, independent of whether there's star formation. And so, you know, why is it we don't see any clumps in the interior? And it may well be that those, you know, once they start to get in a little bit, they decay relatively rapidly and get tidally sheared and disrupted. And so I gather that there is some clump, which Robin talked about, which actually is seen in the inner circumnuclear, inside the circumnuclear disk. It's an important question. Why isn't there a lot of neutral gas inside? The amount of gas in the ionized spiral is of the order of 50 to 100 solar masses. Depends a little bit on what density you adopt, but it's very different than 10 to the fifth, at least, solar masses. Independent, I mean, you know, we're estimating higher densities, but basically the masses are, you know, still very substantial in circumnuclear disk. Whether you take our estimates or the previous estimates, it's still of the order of 10 to the fifth solar masses. Tidal. I haven't looked in that. So you're saying you change from a series of Keplerian orbits to one where the rotation curve is somewhat flatter, but how would that affect the gas distribution? Somebody had you or somebody else dynamically modeled it?
The story goes back, I think, to Kolb and Daedalus, who argued that you have more shear in the Keplerian potential to stir up the cloud.
The thing I worry about with the modeling of the gas dynamics is that it's very tricky to start off with semi-stable conditions to start initially for those clumps. And if you don't, obviously they disrupt on a very short time scale. Which makes me nervous, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. The 20 and 50 is one of the best things. That comes to the cloud, they're estimating to have masses that are more than 10 or not. So it's much, much brighter than it's just not. So do you see that through the density difference?
Yeah, a very good point. Remember, the densities here, if we're correct, are typically 3 or 4 times 10 to the 7, which puts it a factor of several hundred above critical density, which means that the molecules are emitting very inefficiently. Maybe, you know, only one decay in 200 is by radiation as opposed to collisions. So I think that's the explanation. I mean, it's just inefficient. I myself was, you know, I'm used to observing, you know, standard molecular clouds where densities 10 to the fifth are high density. I mean, I'm totally amazed. Even independent of our estimates, the densities here are 10 to the sixth or 10 to the seventh, or 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8. And, you know, that's unlike any cloud I've ever encountered. Plus, you know, very incredibly small. It's an entirely different environment. And I think one should avoid, you know, the standard molecular cloud thinking to some extent. I think the 10 to the 6 is entirely consistent with, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, with the required luminosity for ionization of the ionized gas. But the 10 to the 6 was from far infrared continuum in the circumnuclear disk from Jackie Davidson's name. So I think the numbers are, I think it's probably coincidental, the numbers are more or less the same.
I need to take one or two last questions and then you can continue. High density, the inner groundwater is
chemistry must be really quite rich. And then that's to give you a diagnostic of density in water soil. Does anybody stand here to know whether the molecular mind of exotic species or more complex species than you might otherwise have found?
Jim will be doing that in 6 months. I mean, there's so much to be done at sub-millimeter wavelengths with reasonably high resolution, but right on the same structure.
Yeah,